Last night at Ewood Park, a group of Blackburn Rovers fans had the chance to put questions to some key members of the club's on- and off-field management structure. The meeting, which is a twice-yearly event, included a range of matters from finances to the perceived lack of communication from the owners, the Rau family. The panel consisted of Director of Football Operations Paul Senior, the club's Finance Director Mike Cheston, and new head coach Tony Mowbray. The evening, overseen by Andy Bayes, kicked off with a question directed to Mr. Cheston from the New York Rovers fans group over the specific roles of each board member.
Starting with myself, I'm a director, I'm responsible for finance, HR and IT systems, with the recent appointment of Paul Senior as Director of Football and Operations. He obviously oversees all the football operations as well as the operations at the stadium. So Hale acts as the point of contact between the club and the owners. I think they're the three main people. Robert is a non-executive director who assists the club from time to time.
We would like to know from the Ewood WMC the recruitment process. If I could put this to you, Paul Senior, people would like to have a little more information on the role that Sahel Pasha has at the football club, the recruitment process and issues surrounding Owen Coyle, the succession planning that the football club has.
It's a good question. In terms of the role of Sahel, I think Mike has pretty much covered that in terms of Mike's role in complementing the management structure that we have in an advisory role, working with the owners. With regards to the Owen Coyle, looking back, obviously I wasn't here at the time that Owen was appointed, but I do know that a criteria was drawn up with regards to the recruitment process and what was essential for the club in making a decision on a manager. And the club went about interviewing various folk and came to the conclusion that Owen was the appropriate fit at the given time. With regards to Tony, I think we'll all agree it's been a positive appointment, and I'm quite happy with, when I look at Tony's appointment, that it seems to be working out so far. Early days, my work was very much to, once the decision was made that we were going to go in a different direction, to draw up a criteria based on what we were looking for in terms of, did we want a manager, head coach, whose teams played in a particular way, who can organise the teams in a particular way, who can educate players, a coach, educator, as opposed to coach, trainer, a manager who fitted our profile, personality-wise, as well as quality. So once that criteria was drawn up, the owners were quite happy with that. I then went about a process of having conversations with potential parties that could be suitable or a good fit for us. I'll be quite candid. The first person I met was Tony, and the last person I met was Tony. And I think the rest is history.
Another point that's been made, Paul, is your role in the recruitment of players and in terms of the relationship between yourself as a director of football operations and the head coach?
Well, the relationship when it comes to the recruitment of players at the football club is between myself and Tony is an important one. Fundamentally, Tony is the lead professional at the football club for the first team. We'll define gaps in or priorities for recruitment in terms of positions, not necessarily players, but and Tony may have his own views on players. And then we have a recruitment team, a scouting team, who will draw up the shortlist of players. Our role is to be very clear on criteria, so it might be pace, power, 1v1 dominance, if it's, say, a particular position. I have to look at it from a financial perspective in terms of what market we can operate in, so we set the financial parameters. Then we think about personality. So those are the three key areas in terms of cost, quality, personality, because it's important that we only bring the right personalities into the football club who can complement what we have. As opposed to there may be a player out there who really could improve the team, but if the personality's wrong and they're a bad fit for what we have, they may not be a good fit for Blackburn Rovers. I only want to bring players to the football club who are actually going to be hungry and have desire to actually play for the shirt, actually, as opposed to potential players coming from the Premier League, career on the way down, as opposed to I want players with upside and their careers are on the way up and they're hungry and they want to come here, as opposed to seeing us as a meal ticket or, if you like, that last big contract. So hard upside is important. But coming back to the question, the relationship between myself and Tony, ultimately, any player coming to the football club, it's important that Tony has ownership of this decision because Tony has to be able to motivate these players and get the best out of these players. Those players, any player coming into the club, needs to know that the manager has had ownership of that decision. Otherwise, why are they going to respect the head coach or the manager if they feel that they've been bumped, they've been brought in? I've been at football clubs where things like that have happened, and you've all heard the horror stories of players being forced upon the manager or the head coach. It doesn't work. Ultimately, if I'm skillful enough at my job, then all decisions on player recruitment will be co-produced and co-owned.
The Fans Forum have sent a question in regarding this area, Mike Cheston, and they state that we know that Mike is in charge of financial matters, Paul looks after the football side of things, and Sir Hale, as we've heard, acts as an intermediary with the owners. But who is considered the senior partner, and where does the, in inverted commas, buck stop at Ewood Park?
We all work within a budget and parameters that have been set down to us by the owners. So within those parameters, we have the authority to work according to our respective responsibilities. There are certain decisions that we have to defer to the owners, some of the major expenditure items, things like new manager, the key appointments, things like that. So we make our recommendations and then the owners make the key decisions. And in keeping with a lot of organisations where you have an owner-managed company, it's very typical where even Robert had the same relationship with Jack Walker. From time to time, Robert knew that he would have to get permission from Jack Walker to do this or that.
We just have a quick question here. If you are addressing the panel, could you give us your full name before you do, please, and then the gentleman know who they're speaking to?
Yep, James Hunt. Question for Mike and Paul, really. It's a single part of responsibility. Obviously, you must have someone at your report, so I'm assuming the Venkies. Just looking at the accounts, what are published, though. Directors named Mike Cheston, Finance Director, Gandu, Babu, and Rob Carr. So from those three, I'd imagine those are the ones who've been tasked with responsibility. But Sue Hale, obviously you said you've been working with him. Paul, yourself as well, act as a sort of coalition. But where does the book actually stop at with those three?
As I've just explained, we have a certain amount of delegated authority to make decisions, and obviously we take responsibility for those decisions. And then from time to time, we make recommendations to the owners and we follow the recommendations that they come back with. We believe that we've got the confidence and delegated authority from the owners to be able to do that. And that's how it works.
Another question here.
It's a quick one there, Mike. It's Mark Fish, the chairman of the BRFC Action Group. Just listening there, that you've just said that you take responsibility. You sat in this room 6 months ago and told us that Owen Cole was a standout candidate. Mm. You'd put three names forward and none of them were as good as the person who was chosen for you. Mm. So you choosing was worse than what we got. That was awful. Are you going to take responsibility and walk away from this football club? Your appointment for this football club has been diabolical. We've just seen there that we've gone £30 million of the loans have gone up under your watch as finance director. You've been worse as managing director. There's no communication with the supporters. We don't get to talk to anybody at the club anymore. All this has happened on your watch. When are you going to walk away? Because you're the most unpopular director at this football club and we've had some bad ones.
Well, you would expect me to obviously respond to that. And you, as I said last time, you're entitled to your opinion. I have been appointed by the owners to do a job. I've demonstrated the improvement in financial results in the time here. Also, when I arrived, we were not FFP compliant. I'm not going to take full credit for that. There are a whole number of other people that were involved in that. I was appointed by the owners. I believe, as I said last time, that I've got the support of the staff who see the issues that we face, which have been very challenging at times. And obviously managing the relationship with the owners, the supporters and the staff at very difficult times. And in many ways, we've made progress. In many ways, the club has performed very well. And I've drawn attention to some of the achievements that have been made. Clearly, there are areas of disappointment, but we're working very hard to resolve those.
We'll take one more question. Paul Senior, just like to make a point as well.
Since I joined the club in January, as Mike has alluded to, he's responsible for the areas of finance and IT, and I pick up all the other departments, so whether that be the footballing department or whether that be all the other operational stuff such as commercial, hospitality, security, and all the other elements. So between us, if you like, on a daily basis, we are the directors charged with managing the football club and making best efforts to take things forward. So it's we have other folk who work with us. Obviously, Rob, as a non-executive director, brings great challenge and support to our work. There's a great deal of experience and expertise that Rob brings to the agenda. But fundamentally, we can't look back too much. I appreciate there's some sensitive topics looking back, but we can't control looking back. But what we can do is influence going forwards.
We have a lot to get through, ladies and gents. We'll take one more question on this area, and then we must move on for now.
A question for Mike. You described Owen Coyle as the outstanding candidate. The thing is, before you employed him, did you actually look at his win record at Bolton, Wigan or Houston? Because his win ratio was awful. What makes him the outstanding candidate?
We went through the criteria at the time. The criteria were many and various. Yes, we did obviously consider his previous record. As a collective, we made the recommendations to the owners and Owen was ultimately appointed. A number of managers we might have liked, but certain criteria we could not meet, and others did not want to join the club for whatever reason. So we did go through an exhaustive criteria process. A number of people were involved, recommendations were made, and the appointment followed.
To move on to the next part of the agenda, it's all about communication. And the New York Rovers are asking for an improvement in communication. Can the club commit to providing regular and honest updates on Blackburn Rovers' current situation? They say much of what comes out of the club is almost comedic and that it ignores the way supporters currently feel. Could I put that to you, Paul Senior?
Communication is an essential component of how we communicate with our fans, our community. I think whilst there may be some disquiet, now things have been communicated, I understand that. I'm not going to try and sugarcoat things. But there are clearly some areas that potentially must be working okay. With regards to, we have had fans forum events as well, which a number of folk here today have actually attended those meetings as well, which I understand is representation of the various groups where these meetings are due to take place on a regular basis every couple of months, which is a really effective communication mechanism. And I've had the fortune to attend one of these meetings, which is a really good communication forum. And there was another one a couple of weeks ago, I understand as well. So with those in place, and also these events, which are due to take place twice a year. So in terms of communication, consultation, ensuring that the views of our fans and key forums of this nature inform, shape and design our work going forward. So there's some good stuff going on. Obviously, we're not saying it's perfect, and I'm not advocating that. However, and I'll be very clear to remove the potential for any doubt, by comparison with other clubs, there's clearly some good stuff in place. But there's always scope for improvement.
We've got some finances to talk about in just a moment. Just before we do that, there's a couple of other fans groups who've asked questions along similar lines, and they involve the owners and communication from the owners. One says that owners' continued failure to engage or outline plans for the club, and also, in general, the communication from the owners. It might be of best interest to get a comment from you both on that, the communication that comes from the owners to here.
The owners delegate the running of the club to the appointed executives, and we have that line of communication via Sir Hale currently, so the communication lines are definitely there insofar. I appreciate communication with directly with the fans is relatively low. In keeping with a lot of owners of other clubs, they're very private individuals. We should respect the fact that they do continue to support the club financially and in other ways. So the fact that they do not engage directly with the fans very often, or obviously they're 6,000 miles away as well. All these factors need to be taken into account, but they are committed to the club and they do communicate with the executive via Sir Hale.
Paul, would you like to comment before we get a question?
Just following on from Mike's comments, I mean, I've worked at six clubs. Some of the owners of the clubs I've been at, such as Spurs, where the owner never had a relationship with the fans, to so other clubs, Crystal Palace I worked at, the chairman was a regular with the fans. There's no best practice guideline, and we appreciate, you know, what the fans are saying. But we feel we have some forums in place, but there's always scope for improvement. I get that. But there's no one single model where fans have that regular interface with the owners. There's no one club that does it perfectly, and there's some clubs that don't do it so well. But there is always a mixed model.
There's a gentleman waiting to ask a question.
My name's Andy. Paul, when I think it was your first interview or second interview, you said that you spoke to the owners on a daily basis. My question is, who exactly do you speak to? Do you mean you speak to the owners via Sir Hale, or do you speak to Balaji Rao or another individual? Who exactly do you speak to on a daily basis?
During January, having just started at the football club, there's regular communications with several of the aforementioned people that you've just alluded to. Because June, January was the January transfer window, and there was other things going on at the football club and as well, and maybe a duty of care to ensure that how I felt the club was going in my early observations, and that has been lessened now in terms of there isn't that need for a daily, regular communication. Results on the pitch are improving, So there's less intensity off the pitch, if you like, for all of our departments, not just the first team. So that regular feedback loop is not as intense as it was during January.
Mike said at the last meeting, and has said numerous times, that he has no direct contact with the owners. It's always via Sahil for yourself. Yeah. So it seems very bizarre that yourself came in as a new employee and suddenly has direct contact with the owners when the finance director has no direct contact. Seems very strange.
I wouldn't say no. It's very infrequent. But yeah.
We really want to get to the crux of Sahil Pasha and clarify his role, because it seems that everything goes through him. And is he actually the shadow managing director of this club?
No, not at all. As Mike has said, Mike manages finance and most of the other areas of the football club I'm responsible for. So there are different levels of accountability, not different levels of accountability, different areas of responsibility that may come into focus. And the first team, let's be clear, the first team, the fortunes of the first team drive the fortunes of the football club, which is why that comes under intense scrutiny and interest to the owners at any given time. Finance is important because it's important that we have those parameters in place, that infrastructure in place, so we're not compromised. But during January, where results were, there was a sharp, intense interest from the owners. What was going on and how were we going to address those shortcomings?
Thanks, Paul. Let's take another question.
The attendances at Ewood, they show the fans are disenchanted. Without Solin, how do the Venkies intend to win the fans back over? That is the only possible way they could win the fans back over.
Well, initially, obviously, we've got to concentrate on the performance of the team and get us up the table. And then in time, hopefully, the owners will begin to support the club by providing more finance, etc., etc. That process itself will demonstrate that the club is going in the right direction.
Following on from that, I think that we understand that the numbers in terms of the fan base, there's been a problem in recent years, but since results have been picking up, we've actually seen an increase in terms of uptake of various promotions that our commercial team have put on. I think we had the Big Six season ticket promotions, the last six home games of the season, which we had considerable take-up, which was encouraging, I think about 250 approximately. And then for the last four games of the season, we've had, again, a similar promotion where another similar number, 250, have brought that as well. So, hey, it's 500 fans who potentially weren't coming before, who are buying these promotions, who are engaging with the club. It's not radical. It's not the greatest solution. We get that. But results on the pitch will certainly help. And other bits, I think if we get it right on the pitch, it can only enable off the pitch. And we've only seen the positiveness around the stadium at match days on the back of positive results. And not just for fans, but also for the staff as well. And the players, going into the training ground on a regular basis, the buzz, the feeling amongst the players, the upbeatness, and the same with the staff on a daily basis. And the various fans groups, seeing them out in the community or various events, there's a better buzz, there's more positiveness. I think we've got a better story. If you had this discussion 6 weeks ago, it would have been a different discussion. So there's lots of positive stuff. But at the same time, I take on your point.
Question to anybody, really. All we've wanted to do as supporters is speak to the owners, whether that be Balaji Ray or Venkatesh or whatever. Is there a reason for them not wanting to come and sit on a table like that and speak to us? We're in the 21st century. I asked it at the last meeting. We've got a projector here. Why can't we get on Skype? It's an hour and a half out of our evening.
One is the distance. I know the technology. Two is the private nature as individuals. Three, they've delegated the authority for people to run the club. And I've already explained we've got good communications with the owners. And yes, I have tried to engage with the owners via Sahil as well, but directly, in the sense that can we engage with the fans in a more direct way than we have. And we've managed to get the owners' statement at the last two meetings. They do follow the fortunes of the club closely. I make them aware of the frustrations.
Why don't they look after us? Why don't we want to make us happy? What will make us happy is them speaking to us. We just want an answer to why they won't. We know for a fact Balaji is in London on a regular basis. Mm. Why don't we work this meeting around Balaji? Mm. We're happy to come whenever he's here.
Again, I'll make them aware, as I have done on previous occasions. So.
Gentlemen, we have to move on very quickly. One gentleman's been waiting a long time who's not had a chance to speak yet. And your question is, sir?
Why is Sahil not here tonight? If he's talking to the owners through you, Mike, surely he should be here giving us the answers instead of you being here. At the last forum, you promised to get an interim meeting with him, and that's not happened. Can you tell me why that's not happened?
I said I would do my best. That's exactly the words I used. And I have tried. he can't make it tonight. His role at the club is, as he's always stated, is to improve relations between the clubs.
So who's his boss?
His boss are the owners.
It's the owners, and then it's Sahil, and then it comes down. Hmm. So surely he should have been here tonight. If he's in direct contact with the owners, he's the man who we want to see, and he's not here again tonight. Does he actually work at this club or not?
Yes, he does work.
Is he based here, or is he based in London? Or?
He works between both India and here. That's the nature of his
role. And
well.
who pays his salary?
We pay a salary.
Blackburn Rovers, who Venky's London Limited.
We pay a salary.
Well, I think for the next meeting, he should be made to come here.
I'll make him
imperative
aware.
That we get to speak to this gentleman.
Talk to Ellie about communication. And, OK, that question was asked last time, and you said, oh, I'll try. We accept that's what you said.
Yeah.
But at no point since then have you come out and said, this was the answer, which was what I call communication, feedback to the people in this room or who attended that meeting and the many people who will listen to it. They want to know what was the answer. Not just silence and nothing happens.
Yeah.
We want to know what exactly did he say when you asked him.
I have asked him. And his answer was that his role is to liaise between the club and the owners.
So effectively his answer was no.
The owners haven't got the decency to say, sorry, we've made mistakes, we'll come down, we'll come and meet you. They won't go on Skype for an hour and a half out their own time. Why should I pay 10% of my net pay to come and watch this football club every fortnight on a Saturday, travel away from home on a Tuesday night, take time off work? Why should I do it? Because believe you me, I'm like a lot of people, this will be my last season as a season ticket holder unless we get some direct communication from the owners and not fobbed off. And that is all that I have.
Okay. My question's to Mike. It's regarding Sahil. You've just confirmed that he is employed by the club. Does he have a title for the club at all?
Yes, he does have a title.
Which is?
Something like management consultant. I can't remember the exact title.
Do you not find it a little bit concerning from your point of view, Mike, that Paul has come along tonight and confirmed that he can openly pick up the phone and speak to Balaji or Venkatesh over in India? Yeah. You've been here for how long now?
3 years.
3 years, and you still have to go through Sahil?
I don't have to.
Well, that's so why is he here then? If you can open dialogue with the owners freely... Why are we wasting money under the current financial position we're in paying a director or management consultant to jet between India and England? Yeah. Is that not a drain on our resources?
Mm. Sahil, I've found, has been extremely useful. And it's good for Blackburn Rovers that we have somebody representing the owners who works at the club. So it's much easier to get across the issues back to the owners in a way we feel that we can get through. So he's very useful and very supportive of us in that regard. I always have the option, and that's been made clear, and I do have direct correspondence, but for me, Sahil achieves it. For me, I do have from time to time, if I want, and I have done, but I do it mainly through Sahil. When Paul first arrived at the club...
So basically what you're saying is you can speak to the owners, but you'd rather pay somebody else a couple of £100,000 a year to do it.
No, excuse me, I never mentioned any figures. I've already explained it's good that somebody who's familiar with the owners understands what the issues are here and can relay that back to India. I do have communication with the owners from time to time directly. Paul's situation when he first arrived at the club was different in the sense that he was brought in as director of football and with a very specific task and a very immediate issue at hand. And given, and they were very interested, obviously, in what his initial observations were. And Paul's already explained that over time that's become less frequent. I don't need to contact the owners every day, and I don't, in fact, communicate with Sahil every day either. But from time to time, it's been good to have that ability.
Gentlemen, we have to move on to the financial area of the agenda now, if we may. Mike, there are a number of issues in the financial area of the agenda here which come under your remit. And a lot of them are all concerned with the rising club debt, the recent accounts, the financial situation, and most importantly, probably, does the club have a plan in place in the event that Blackburn Rovers are in League One? Paul, would you like to start with that one?
I made it very clear when I started the club in January that, like all good things, what we have to do is forward plan. And There is, whilst we're focused on staying in this division and consolidating in this division, because it's important for the future of the club we stay here, it's incumbent on us to anticipate the potential that we may be relegated, even though we don't want to entertain that thought. We do have to potentially plan for that and be on and off the pitch. And those conversations with my heads of department and with Mike and his finance team are ongoing with regards to, well, if we are relegated, what could we afford? What would the world look like? And I'm having conversations, if we talk about just the football side, with Tony, with agents, about players, about potential targets, based on option A, which is we consolidate, and which is looking good at the moment in terms of the form that we're in and the uplift recently, if we can consolidate and stay in the Championship. Or on the other side is potentially if we are relegated, well, in terms of what does our recruitment plan look like then? So it is incumbent on us to do that. With regards to the other departments I'm responsible for, naturally, if we are relegated, we're going to have to look at, obviously, making the right decisions, how we can make best use of what resources we have, and also look at doing things differently. Again, like anybody, if we have a budget, if you have a home budget or a department budget, you have to live within your means. So a simple answer to a simple question is yes, we do have a plan in the event of relegation.
And in terms of the debt, Mike, would you like to address that?
As I explained before, the actual debt position, actually, in terms of the debts of the club, the main debt clearly is that from the owners, and that is a direct function of the investment that they put into the club. There's no requirement to pay it immediately, and it's interest-free. The rest of the debt is managed. All payments are on schedule. We're up to date with all our creditors, comply with all the legislation. So the debt situation is being managed. As you've seen from the last set of accounts, the actual debt position hasn't gone up last year. In fact, it dropped slightly. And that's something that we need to keep on top of going forward. But at this point in time, we're still relying on the owner's support.
There's a section here to talk about future cost cutting. I know, Paul, you've already alluded to the fact that everything is being looked at in the event of come what may, come the end of the season. There are one or two rumours, as is often the case, that there might be some stands closing next season. There might be a sale of assets other than players. Could you address any of those rumours that supporters are concerned? Will Ewood Park still have four stands open next season,
Ewood,
for example?
Park will still have four stands open next season. There's no foundation to that rumour, Andy.
And in terms of future cost-cutting measures for this football club, are there any plans in place to sell any assets, be it players or not?
None that I'm aware of. Focus is on consolidating, staying in this division, with a view to having a really good summer, recruitment-wise, and pushing on next season. Absolutely. In terms of if we are relegated, we will obviously have to try and find a way to... I mean, we have... Let's be clear. We have the ninth highest wage bill in the Championship. We invest very favourably in the playing squad. We're in a situation where we have some players who will be out of contract this summer. Not all of those players, in my opinion, and discussions I've had with Tony also, are going to be part of the vision going forwards. So what we have to do is reutilise that resource that we have to try and bring players who are going to be better than what we have, but also have the right hunger, the right desire to play for the shirt.
A quick question from the floor.
Just some observations I made from the abbreviated club accounts. Series of short-term loans, which suggest working capital issues. We've had loans at 14%, 9% before LIBOR. What's the added value in those? I noticed the season ticket sales for this year currently were mortgaged for £1.8 million. Works out about, what, 6,000 tickets? Before people have had the chance to go to work, earn their money, you've already sold their season tickets for the year. Are we doing that for next season? What's the plan? Because I do appreciate you can't take all the credit, as you said earlier, for the increased finance position.
Absolutely, we've had to, from time to time, take short-term loans, but we are managing that position in terms of managing the cash flow, and we're repaying them.
But it's 7% of your turnover. So it's a football club, but it runs like a business. 7% of your turnover is going directly on interest alone. £1.7 million interest in 2016 you paid out of your company.
Including the bank overdraft interest.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's like a never-ending cycle. It's not astute finance.
That was to address a cash flow issue at the time.
So we've had cash flow issues.
We have to manage the cash flow in order to make our payments as and when they fall due. So, yes, we have had to take short-term loans out.
Are you anticipating this problem continuing in the future? obviously we've seen numerous sales, disposals of players, you know, some high salaries like Jordan Rhodes. We get relegated at end of year. I mean, where the FFP rules change for League One, where cash flows are actually submitted more frequently, that's going to come to light that, you know, we've got significant funding issues. Doesn't make sense to me if we've got wealthy owners, owners who pledge the support. Just read a statement earlier today. If we've got these fantastic billionaire conglomerate chicken farmer owners, why the need for all these short-term loans? Who's lending the money, Mike?
Various financial institutions that we've done these agreements with. These are all things that any business has to do in order to manage its cash flow. And the owners can't always provide the funds. And we shouldn't rely on the funds, on owners to provide the funds. We've got to find ways of managing the cash flow.
Test does state that they've got to show the wealth, show the ability to continually fund the club. It's very worrying to see the club in this picture, Mike.
But the extent of the short-term loan is very temporary and very relatively small.
Mike, can you promise the next 2 years we will not go into administration, yes or no?
I can't guarantee things like that. It's not fair.
It's all coming out now, isn't it? It's all coming out.
No, it's not fair. You can never say never. The likelihood is absolutely not. But I cannot guarantee anything.
The owners, are they going to walk away? They're not going to walk away. The owners are committed to the future of the club. If the owners were to walk away, in which they have no intention to do so, which was made very clear, then, unless we could find a suitable owner, we may be in a compromised position. But at this moment in time, there is no chance of administration. We haven't got that crystal ball to know what will happen in 2, 3, 4 years' time. But at this moment in time, this club is doing okay. Yes, there's scope for improvement on and off the pitch. We get that. So let's not just be obsessed with the finance figure, but I understand the concerns around that. But at this moment in time, for where we are and the short-term future, the club is on the right track in terms of managing our bills and designing out those inefficiencies.
You're listening to a recording of last night's Fans Forum meeting at Blackburn Rovers.
Ladies and gents, we're going to move on to the players, agents and development of academy players. A couple of supporters groups are asking about the role of agents and concerns they have, mentioning the Doyne agency. And clarification too on SEM and Kentaro involvement. Are they involved with the club, even in an advisory position? Paul, could you clarify all of those points that I just made, please?
Absolutely. In terms of, we have no agency advising us. My role is to deal with football and operations. And in terms of on an advisory level, I take no counsel from any agency or agency or agents.
Onside sports management,
that's correct,
US. Does she also work freelance for other agencies, sort of like a management consulting sort of type role?
She manages her own company.
Is that her only involvement in sports agencies?
That's correct, yeah. Sorry, what was the other point about Kentaro?
Yes, SEM and Kentaro, is there any involvement from them even in an advisory position?
No. We have no reliance on agents. We have a relationship with agents based on agents who can bring players to the club. And it's incumbent on me to have a good network. My network determines my net worth, as it were. But fundamentally, if we're player-driven, not agent-driven. If there's a player that... I can't look back. I understand tensions of the past. I understand that. But in terms of looking forwards, if a player is good enough and they meet our criteria, then we will obviously have to deal with all forms of agents. Most players have agents.
Does that also mean that Suhail Pasha no longer works for Kentaro? Because he did previously.
Well, I can't comment on what he previously did, but what I do know is at this moment in time he's not employed by those organisations. He's employed by the owners. He looks after a number of the, or has a relationship with a number of the owners' portfolios, including this football club, working in other countries as well. I've not been aware of any link or relationship between a professional at that level. And he's employed by the owners, by the club.
For Mike and Paul, can you tell me if there's going to be more than £250,000 spent in this summer transfer window coming up? You can tell me, Mike, the exact figure we made off player sales this season, and how much we've spent. Is it acceptable?
We have to work within the parameters that we need to. In terms of your question, which is Paul's better equipped to answer, given the going forward.
This is about last season's summer transfer window and the one coming up now.
We have to work within...
You can tell me.
I am telling you the financial constraints that we work with. We in fact, I also made bids for other players that weren't accepted. The fact that we only spent £250,000 is what happened. We also got a number of loan players and we work within the means. And a lot of those...
Couldn't even tell you if Stephen Hendry's still here. So two or three of them had left by January. The summer recruitment, good or bad, you tell me, Mike.
Well, it was mixed results, wasn't it? No. Some of the players come in and have done very well for us.
The league position tells me otherwise.
The league position is what it is, absolutely. But I can't... At the time where you bring a manager and you support the manager, that's what you do.
Paul Senior.
Look, I'd like, as I say, for me, looking back, history, is it going to help us? I'd rather focus on looking forwards. I think January, when there was pressure to bring in lots of new players, I was very clear from the outset that I spent January assessing the squad. I felt we had a squad that we had the ninth highest wage bill in the Championship, as I was very clear on. We had a squad that we had good players. Was it the systems? Was it the players? We had some good players that potentially... I mean, an example being if we were to manage... If we've lost 17 points from 85 minutes onwards in games. So is that about players or is that about systems? So, again, the talent was there. It could be. But game management, because obviously players make decisions, I get that. But for me, it's about game management. And I think we've got some good players in the squad. And I make it very clear that in terms of recruitment, Tony's here, good recruitment decision in January or February, would we agree? I think Lucas Jow, would we agree? Good recruitment. I would say the management team that I put together, that Tony's agreed to work with, I think good decision. I think Marvin Emnes, would we agree? Good recruitment. Marvin was recalled by Swansea to go back to Swansea by Paul Clement, the new coach. So it wasn't as straightforward getting Marvin back and then getting Marvin at a deal that was right for this football club. So in terms of January onwards, our recruitment, I feel, in response to where our gaps are, where our priorities are and where our needs are, have been positive. Looking back too much isn't really going to help us. Looking forwards, I think we've got some good players and, as I said, we've got the right management structure to help take the club forwards.
Can we just take a question over here? Someone's been waiting, sorry.
The question's for Michael, Paul. Sorry, I'm Roy. I'm not from around this area, but I'm a massive supporter of the club. I actually come from the Fleetwood Blackpool area. Now, I live between the two. Both clubs do a lot for the community. They do a lot of free tickets being given out. And I'm quite surprised, you know, because I work in a school myself, to look at all the empty stands that are all empty. I'm quite surprised that you've not targeted the children as a new income and a way of getting the support base up. You know, I mean, you've got so many schools in this area. Catchment area is massive. And I'm quite surprised that you don't go around the schools giving free tickets out, because they are your future.
We do engage with the schools and we do provide free tickets to the community for every match. Our community trust is extremely engaged with the local community, and you saw the number of participants, etc., etc. And we're very proud of what the community does, and we do support. And obviously, we recognise that to get into schools and the local community is one of the ways forward in terms of bringing future fans towards the club.
We have one of the most successful community trust programmes nationally, and we have to be very measured about the amount of complimentary tickets we can give out. I think on average it's a certain allocation, and because we have paying customers, people who pay. So there is something about the product holding its value, because if we do give out an inordinate amount of complimentary tickets, what does that say about the folk who have actually paid? So it is, I get what we're saying about future fans and future opportunities and things of that nature, but we are targeted, the community trust, in our work with schools. So there are opportunities out there, but at the same time, these tickets, people pay for them, and we have to hold their value.
Tony Mowbray has been sat there waiting patiently throughout this evening, listening to a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, a lot of people who want to get their points made. It's now time to make your points to the Rovers head coach. So if anybody would like to kick us off, I will gladly walk over, and you can ask a question to Tony.
Tony, Conor Mahoney, he's not signed yet. Lots of rumours going round, especially about other side of Accrington. We don't want him going there. We want him staying at Blackburn Rovers. Can you do your utmost, please, to get that kid signed up?
Conor Mahoney sat in my office twice in the last 10 days. I like him as a boy. I like him as a footballer. I've tried to get underneath his skin a little bit to the point of trying to find out what his thoughts are. I want him to love football. I want him to play for his hometown team. As I left school and played for mine for 12 years, I want him to realise that if he's got ambition to win the Premier League or to play for his country or whatever it is, you need to start your career, you need to play football, you need to put your boots on the grass and go and play, and hopefully with people who want you to do well. You know, I see every time he goes and warms up, he's got his own song, the fans love him. I've appealed to him twice, really, about do the right thing for yourself, for Conor Mahoney, really, and I think that is to play football, to get on the pitch, put your boots on, and be encouraged by the people around you, do it for the right reasons, for football reasons, not for financial gain. At the age he is, he needs to play. And if he has ambitions, or we can't meet his ambition in a year or two's time, and we don't look like we're going to get back to the Premier League, and we're not pushing hard, and somebody big comes along, listen, bottom line, you have to do what's right for the boy's career. If his talent outgrows us, I think we shake him by the hand and say, thanks for the last few years. That's how I see it, and that's how I appeal to the boy, to try and say, listen, I love football, I'm drenched in it, and I want talent in my team, I want the best players, I want you to stay and play for the fans of Rovers. I want you to go out there, they all sing your name, you dance round a few people, you bend a few in the top corner, I want memories for him. If he goes to a perceived bigger club, sit on the bench, one of 10, 12, 15 young under-23s they carry, all with aspirations, never get a game. I don't understand why he wouldn't want to sign his contract, come and put his boots on, play for us, score some goals, excite the fans, see where your career goes, see where you want to play. He nods at me, he says all the right things. I address his advisors to the point of where I don't know what your advisors are saying, because we do live in a world where football advisors, where agents run their lives if they're allowed to. I try to get to the point under his skin where take control of your own life. As I say, this is how I talk to them. I'm not your dad, but I want to tell you, I have a duty of care for Conor Mahoney. I will look after you. I know you're on the bench, but we're in a pretty dire situation at the moment. I need men to do a man's job. And I know you're a boy and you get on every game because I believe you're going to dance around somebody, create a goal for it, as he's done once or twice. And yet, is it right for me to stick Mahoney and Niambi down the right-hand side to try and save this club in this league this season? I'd prefer to put a Bennett there or a man who understands when I'm telling him about work ethic and getting back and closing off passing lines. Somebody who's heard it and done it and can do it. And when we need a bit of magic on the right wing, dancing on his left foot inside, listen, I stick him on the pitch and tell him, go on, son, go and show everybody what you can do. I try to inspire him, really, with football talk. And that's all I feel I can do. I can't put a gun to his head and say, you have to sign this contract. I can't go to his agent and say to his agent, what are you doing? Young lads maybe should be sitting in that corner over there or at the back, listening to the emotion and the passion of the people who care about the football club. So I sit here, new to your football club. I get emotional listening to you, how passionate you are for it. It's your life. And I'll come and go. Hopefully I hear a while and we have some success and we have great days. Yous will still be here long after I've gone, long after Conor Mahoney's, you know, wherever he goes. Hopefully he stays here a long time. But sometimes young footballers need to feel the emotion and the passion of what football's about.
Conor Mahoney is a conversation we have on a regular basis. Yeah. We feel it has an important part to play in this club's future. And as a player since January, I've had a regular dialogue with his advisors to try and come to a conclusion. So we are pushing to try and get to a place where we can make it happen. So it's not without effort. We are very keen on securing the future of this player at our football club.
My first impressions, I've got total empathy with the concerns, and from afar I've watched what's gone on at the football club, and I can see your emotion for it. For me, it's an opportunity to have a football team that I think can compete. And I've said to the players, and my players are sick of my meetings because with the game, we've had seven games in 22 days. A lot of the work's been done in the meeting room, showing them video clips, showing them good practice, bad practice of what we've been doing, how we've worked on the grass, and then taking it onto the pitch. And yet, I feel as if there's a great opportunity. There's some really, really exciting footballers in this club. Footballers, when I say exciting, I mean they look me in the eye. They're desperate to do well. You can, when I judge a person, when I look at him and I'm talking to him, I see whether there's anything going on. I call it behind the eyes. You're looking at them. Are they interested? Are they listening? Do they want to make you happy with the way they try and put across your thoughts to them? And what I would say, there's a lot of footballers in this club that are pretty desperate to do well, and that's why I stand on the sidelines and I share their emotion in the dressing room. So if you'd have had the opportunity to come in the dressing room at the end of the Preston game, you know, nobody could ever question that there wasn't a desire and a passion from the players to try and get out of this predicament. The work that they put in to get themselves into a winning position, you know, was a huge credit to them. It was a huge knock to everybody, but watching them the last 3 or 4 days on the training ground, I'm really looking forward to the challenge of the next few games. On paper, Brighton away, Reading away looks tough, and yet I'm quite excited about going to Brighton and actually showing them what a good football team we've got. And I think we should all be excited and hope that we can find a way of finding enough points over the next 8 games to give ourselves to to push forward. I believe, genuinely, having managed Middlesbrough in the Championship for a few years and being top of the table in January time, 2 years on the bounce, to having won the league with West Bromwich Albion, I look at the group of players and genuinely, I wouldn't just say to you, if I thought, I wouldn't set myself up for this meeting next year and you saying to me, well, Tony, you sat in here and said we could be at the top end of the table. I genuinely think we should be in the top half of the table, threatening the playoffs or be around the playoff positions. My analysts, who were always throwing stats at me, tell me in the last seven games we'd be fifth in the league of the points accrued at the moment. Can we do that over 46 games? I don't see why not. I don't see what's stopping us. Of course, recruitment's massive. Recruitment at any football club is massive. You have to get players who have that ability to take on the pitch what you do on the grass with them. Good footballers win your games. I think organisation, spirit, the ability to inspire all add to a great football team or a good football team. Great players win your leagues, win your cups, win your matches on a regular basis. And for the history of this club as a lover of football, to see Sutton and Shearer in 95 just smashing it in the back of the net every week, winning football matches. I know you had great players. One of my good friends, Stuart Ripley, who I played with for a few years, played on your right wing and just kept feeding them two in the middle. It's a good player. He helped us to get two promotions back to back at Middlesbrough. My job is to try and inspire some young players, hopefully through our academy, and some good signings and some good players already at the club to gel, to bond, to want to achieve. And I think they do. That's why, again, I go back to behind the eyes. I look at them and I think they're embarrassed at the moment where they are, and that's why they are working so hard every game. And it gives me great confidence in the next eight games we will get enough points to stabilise and then to push on next year and make give you a team that you can be proud to watch.
Just a quick question. What's your summer plans, like, recruitment-wise? Mm-hmm. And also, like, have you got anyone in mind, like, as from this stage?
Players-wise, listen, I think first and foremost, if you put it into context, I'm not sure exactly how many days I've been here, but I think about a month. And as I said, we've played seven games in 22 days. My remit at the moment is to try and win some football matches, to try and do the organisation in the meeting rooms and on the grass to try and give the team a chance to get some points. Hand on heart, I sit here, my phone never stops, because every football manager will tell you, as soon as you get a job, every agent who you've ever dealt with over the last 15 years phones you up and is your best mate again, and yet you never heard from him for 4 or 5 months. And that's the way it works, because they all want to come in and have a coffee and a chat and talk about some players who are, you know, going to be great, the best players. I've basically been saying, we're not going to do that at the moment. With the group of players we've got, we have to focus. We have to try and get the points to stay in the league. I think, as Paul suggested there, I'm happy at this moment for when we secure our Championship status, we will sit down with Paul, with the recruitment department, with the scouts who are out there about. And I'd have to say Tommy Johnson has been putting together lists and sheets, I'm sure. We'll sit down and we will look at recruitment, because there's going to be holes in the squad. We've got five or six loans at the moment. I'd have to say some good players from the loans, and, you know, generally they come from decent Premier League clubs, and so, you know, they should be good loans. Can we find some good loans next year if that's what it's going to be? Can we recruit the right players? If you know, I'm assuming I sit here not thinking we're going to be spending 10 million on a centre forward. I sit here thinking, let's find the very, very best that's there. And I trust in my talent to be able to mould a group together to play a brand of football that they all enjoy, that they all buy into, that they all want to work really hard at, that in the Championship can win football matches. Because I genuinely don't think there's any really outstanding football teams in this league. I think there's a lot of really hard-working, honest pros who give everything they've got in every game. I think we can be at the top end. So, let's judge on Brighton at the weekend. So, Brighton second in the league. They've gone first and second with Newcastle all season. I think I shouldn't shout any odds to you, but I think we'll go and give them a really, really tough game. I think they'll know they've been in a football match. I can't sit here and guarantee we're going to win to you, but I guarantee that we will work extremely hard and we'll ask questions of their defence. And as I said to you, look forward to it. You see, the way I'm talking to you now is how I talk to my team. I try and give the players that their manager really cares about their careers, that I want them to work hard, I want them to get better at the things they need to. I want Ryan Nyambi to train after training on his crossing into the box and his heading of the ball. I want every player in every position to try and improve. And I hope they believe me. Generally, they do, because they stay out after training and they work hard. At the moment, it's not easy for me, but I'm working to how I work. I've got a plan of how my teams play, what we do to get the ball into the final third, what we do if we lose it in the final third, what are we like defending on the halfway line when they clear it down the pitch, can we recycle attacks, can we have more than one attack in a phase of play, can we have wave after wave of attacks and eventually score a goal, can we make it difficult for the opposition to get out of their half? And I think it's all new to them. I think they are enjoying it because it's new, and every session is a new session for them. And I go back to what I said right at the beginning, because they're good characters, they're trying to make it work and they're trying to make it happen. As we do it more often, we get better and we get the odd better player in the odd position, and we get the confidence, this is for me, if I get the confidence to put like the talent of a Mahoney on the pitch because I feel he's ready now, and from the start of a season, we're not always looking over our shoulder at results, we're actually going to entertain and win matches. I think there's plenty to look forward to. I know I would look forward to it. The anxiety, if that's what the right word for me is, to win some matches in the last eight games, to get enough points, to put this season to bed, to forget about it, to work really hard through pre-season with the group we've got, to give you a team that you think from the day one, we're looking at the top end, we're not looking at the bottom end. Because we win opening day and then we go away and get a result somewhere and we're off, we're running. You feel as if your team's going to win. Football is that emotion, like I've just said there. It's a wringing wet shirt. Because that's what you give every game.
You are a very brave man for working under the Venkies and Sisu. So did you not think it was a bit of a big risk coming here? I'm happy you're here.
I understand the question. And to be honest, some very respected football people that I've worked with who've been football managers for 30 years actually texted me and said what you said. That, goodness me, you're like a challenge, was one question. I'm a football guy. I'm not a politician, to be honest. Politics... Managing up, if anything, when you look at a football manager's career, I'm so in touch with the footballers that's all I want to do, really. I want to inspire young guys. I want them to love the game. I want them to watch the Champions League Tuesday, Wednesday night and come in and talk about it. I want to improve them as footballers. So I got a call the other night from a footballer I managed 15 years ago. I hadn't spoke to him for about 10, and he picks the phone up and calls you gaffer. From 15 years ago, you see, and it's like a respect thing because you've touched his life, you've done something with his life where he was talking about football and somebody's going to offer him a job at a pretty big club as like a third first team coach. And what I like about football is to be able to help people get better, improve, because it happened to me like I'd been a footballer for 4 years at Middlesbrough when I left school, playing in the first team, and we were like fifth bottom, fourth bottom, sixth bottom every year of League Two, and football felt really, really hard. It felt, is this it? All I have to do is fight. Every game was a struggle and a fight. I was a central defender, and just all I had to do was head the ball and kick it up the pitch, and God, it was shocking. And yet one day a coach came along and like turned the light on in my head. He said, whoa, stand still, what are you doing? Pass it to him. And as he gets it, the man closes him down, he gives it back, you play it into him. And so I had this like game of chess. And for like a whole year, I would go to bed at night and I'd put my head on the pillow and I'd be thinking about the positions on the pitch and where the players have to come. And if he drops a little bit deep and the man comes with him, you just miss them out and you pass into the striker who gets it and turns and he plays it wide. And so I have like pictures going through my mind about football constantly. And what I want to do is pass that on to players to make them understand and want to love the game with a passion and play with a, understand the spaces on the pitch and the numbers and how you score goals and how you defend and how you have to move this block up and down the pitch and across the pitch together. And when you do that and they win, they follow you anywhere, really. And that's why I tell you the story of the lad who for me, 15 years ago I managed him and he's calling me gaffer. And I'm saying, listen, just call me Tony. Listen, Kevin, I won't tell you the lad, other than he was called Kevin. Kevin, just call me Tony. You don't have to call me gaffer. I haven't managed you for 15 years. But the point of the story is I want to teach. I want to educate. I want to show people. I want to inspire them. I tell lots of stories to my team about my life, really, growing up. And see, my dad was a steelworker on Teesside. And one day he got into a bit of trouble. Somebody shouted something at my mum and he took offence to it. And there was a street fight. And I was a little kid of four holding onto my mum's hand. And this was early 70s, just come out the 60s. So she had a beehive, my mum, and my dad was getting battered off this big guy, right, because my dad took offence to it. And I talked to them about, he just kept getting up, and he kept swinging, and he kept swinging. And in the end, the guy didn't want any more. It was like, and I stood there and thought, God, that's my dad. And he had blood, he called it blood and snot, coming out of his face and everything. And it's like, and I tell my team these stories about never giving in. So you play in the top of the table, they have to fight with blood and snot for our team. And that's why I see, I do check their shirts when they come in. I do see, have they been sweating? Are they working hard? Are they tripping over their tongue walking down the tunnel? And if they haven't, I want to know why. And that's one aspect. If you add the talent that I've talked about to the work ethic that you demand of them, and it goes a long way. If Paul can get me Messi and Ronaldo next year, we'll win the league. We'll win the league. But what I'm saying, good footballers will win your football matches, but hard work organisation takes you a long way. And I genuinely feel that this group shouldn't be where they are at the moment, and because they're good lads, they don't deserve it, and I'm trying to help them. And so that in 10 years' time, somebody phones me up and says, Gaffer, I've applied for this job, what do you think? And they ask advice of you for no reason other than the respect level. And I think there's enough good footballers in this club that we can be successful and we can enjoy good times, and yous can enjoy watching the team be successful.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you've really enjoyed listening to Tony for the last 20 minutes, half an hour or so. I think we should show him a bit of appreciation.